Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. He is Lance Meadow. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to get in touch and contact the show that way. Obviously, a great divisional weekend of football, Lance. Always my favorite football weekend of the year. And really, aside from the Patriot game, which was non-competitive, the other three games were all close to the end.
Yeah, it lived up to those expectations that you just mentioned. I thought every game pretty much came down to the wire. I mean, even the New England-Tennessee game, I think, was interesting early on with Tennessee jumping out to a 7-0 lead. Then the second half, obviously, New England pulled away. But all three of those other games, you had high intensity. You saw what stands out about playoff teams, John. I think that's what we learned from those three other games. You know, teams that have playmakers that help out their quarterbacks, strong running games, opportunistic defenses. Listen, it's nothing new. We didn't necessarily have our eyes opened upon new schemes in football, but there's a reason why those teams made the postseason, and there's a lot of other teams on the outside looking in.
Hey, just look at the three defenses and their fronts. Vikings,
yeah,
Jaguars, and, of course, the Eagles. Three teams with very strong defensive fronts.
Similarities.
And then, of course, the Patriots have Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, who obviously is very, very helpful.
Well, and they also sacked Marcus Mariota 8 times, too.
That's
so
correct.
You know, that, to me, is underrated front seven as well.
All right, we can't talk about the games, folks, but we will address the quote-unquote elephant in the room first. Of course, last week we sat here and everyone said Matt Patricia was going to be the next Giants head coach. Well, the flavor of the week appears to be Pat Shurmur. And despite all the reports, I promise you that nothing has been decided, that they cannot have an agreement with anybody because it's against NFL rules. So there are reports, it's speculation. We can obviously talk about Pat Shurmur, the type of coach that he is and what he's done, and we'll do that right now. But just want to make it absolutely clear that it is against league rules. Teams are not allowed to even come to verbal agreements with coaches at this point. So everything you're hearing is probably a little bit premature. I'm not saying the reports are bad, the reporters are bad, their sources are bad, but anything is far from being done, completed, and in the bag, and we'll leave that there.
Well, I'll take it even a step further, John. I mean, look at what happened with Tennessee and Mike Mularkey. The reports fluctuated from day to day with that, right?
He was out, contract extension safe, and then he was out.
Yeah, vote of confidence mixed in the middle. So
about
stories do take a lot of twists and curves. I mean, you know, we went through the Steve Wilkes favoritism. We went through Bill Belichick becoming the next head coach. I mean, every other day.
Nick Saban for a day.
I'm sorry, my apologies.
You forgot about him.
How did I forget about that? Yep. Correct. After Tua saved the day in the second half, and he was going to bolt Alabama. So, you know, this is what happens when you have a lengthy coaching search.
And,
you know, the other thing I wanted to add was any coaches that are still in the mix in the postseason, you can't have a second interview, by the way, until next week as they get prepared for the Super Bowl, assuming they're still alive. Obviously.
And remember, Steve Tisch, the only interview he was in was in the one with Steve Wilkes. So, as they've mentioned, he will be involved later in the interview process so they can interview anybody else. He would be involved in those, and I can't imagine. I mean, it's possible, I suppose, but I would think he would be want to get in front of one of these guys before any decisions were made. But I did go back today, Lance. I didn't have a chance to look at the tape. I had to make a choice. It was either look at the tape or look at some numbers. So I looked at the numbers today, and we'll go through some of the stuff that Pat Shurmur has done over the course of his career. Obviously, a long tenure with the Eagles that was extremely successful with Donovan McNabb, Andy Reid. Andy Reid called plays for a lot of that time, so I'm not quite sure how much to take out of that. Same thing when Pat Shurmur returned to the Eagles, and he was there with Chip Kelly. That wasn't even Pat Shurmur's offense, and that was obviously Chip Kelly's offense. So I'm not sure how much I want to take out of that either. So the three things that I kind of focused on were his 2 years as the Rams offensive coordinator.
Under Spags.
Correct. His 2 years as the Browns head coach, and then this current season with the Minnesota Vikings. So I thought those were probably the five best years to kind of get a feel for the type of coach he was. And here's the problem. Aside from this year with the Vikings, and we'll get to that in a moment, I went back, Lance, and I looked at the Rams in 2009 and 2010, and the Browns in 2011 and 2012. And the numbers are ugly. I'm not going to lie. 29th in yards, 26th, 29th, 25th. Points, 32nd, 26th, 30th, 16th. But you know what I did then? I looked at the rosters of those two football
that
teams.
That was going to be my next statement. Yeah.
And his quarterbacks for the Rams in 2009, Mark Bolger, he gets hurt, Kyle Bowler, and then Null, who I didn't remember existed. He had Sam Bradford as a rookie in 2010. Yes. In 2011, it was Colt McCoy and Seneca Wallace. And then Cleveland in 2012, it was Brandon Whedon. And by the way, it's not just a quarterback position. Here are the wide receivers that he had with those teams, okay? Rams in 09, Donnie Avery was an okay player.
I remember him.
Brandon Gibson, a young Danny Amendola, and Keenan Burton, who I'm sure starred on many of your fantasy
household
teams.
Household name, yes.
In 10, it was Gibson and Amendola again. Laurent Robinson was their number two wide receiver. I think he was a first-round pick at some point, or maybe
ended
a second.
Ended up with the Cowboys.
Oh, did he really? I had forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Cleveland in 2011, Little, who was a
Greg
bust.
Little.
Greg Little,
yes.
A bust second-round pick for them. Muhammad Massaquai, Josh Cribbs.
Massaquai, yeah.
And Norwood. And then in 2012, Little was back again. Josh Gordon is a rookie. Travis Benjamin, and more Muhammad Massaquai. So you tell me how you're supposed to have a successful offense with those quarterbacks and those wide receivers. Steven Jackson was his running back in St. Louis. That was kind of, in my opinion, the best skill position he had in any of those stops.
Well, and the most stable position, I would say, he had, too.
And he had Trent Richardson for 1 year in Cleveland, but, of course, we know how that went. So to me, Lance, And it's really weird to say this about a guy that's been an offensive coordinator for a long time and a head coach before. I'm not sure. I don't know. I haven't seen him enough with real players to know. And it's a very tough evaluation to figure out how good a coach is when he's surrounded by those type of players.
Well, I mean, I think you put some substance in what transpired with the Vikings this year when he did have talent surrounding the quarterback. Now, I know a lot of people are going to point to, well, you know, Case Keenum's not necessarily that different from some of the other guys you named, but the fact that he had Adam Thielen, who's developed, by the way, over the last 2 years, Stephon Diggs, who is still also a young wide receiver, Kyle Rudolph, they revamped the offensive line. Clearly, when you give him talent, I think he finds creative ways to utilize that. Plus, he also lost Dalvin Cook, and he helped resurrect the running game, even though they were using Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray, who started off sluggish and was also dealing with an offseason injury. So, I mean, all of that, I think, deserves some credit. I also remember, John, and I brought this up on last week's show, he took over for Chip Kelly in the final game of the season against the Giants when Chip Kelly was fired. Yeah. And if you remember, the biggest part of that issue for the Eagles that season was the fact that they weren't pounding the football. DeMarco Murray's numbers had dipped, and what did Pat Shurmur emphasize in that final game? Granted, it's a small sample size. DeMarco Murray ran over the Giants in that game.
They scored 35 points in that game.
So what I'm pointing to is, I'm not dismissing the fact that, you know, the results are mixed. What I'm looking at is somebody that does what he can with the talent that he has and tries to put those guys in opportunities to succeed. Not to mention he also won 9 games with Cleveland over 2 years, which is a lot more than what other coaches have been able to accomplish.
Correct. All right, and I talked to my guys over at Pro Football Focus. I wanted them to pull a few numbers for me, and they did. So here's some interesting stuff for him.
For Shurmur's teams.
For Shurmur's teams, yes.
Okay.
Run-pass splits. I had them pull those for me. 2009, 41%. Run, 58% pass. It was almost identical in 2010. And then with the Browns, again, it was about a 40-60 split. 40.5%, 59.5% pass, 39.7%, 60.3%. However, you get to this year with the Minnesota Vikings, and I got a few interesting numbers with this. The Vikings this year have a 47% run-pass ratio, and in fact, I was just doing this before the show. In terms of rushing percentage this year, the Vikings have the fifth highest rushing percentage in football. And on first and 10, they have the highest rushing percentage in football at 61%. So this year with the Vikings, he has run the ball like crazy. And one other thing he pulled for me, Ryan, well, I didn't even ask for it. I actually just opened this email. He just sent it. He sent us some nice numbers here. The Vikings ran outside zone 22% of the time in 2017, the second most used concepts on 4.3 yards per carry. The Giants ran outside zone just 10% in 2017. And again, this is all from Pro Football Focus. And one other number, last 4 years, Pat Shurmur has been offensive coordinator. This includes his time with the Eagles under Chip Kelly. His quarterbacks have ranked in the top 10 in adjusted completion percentage 3 times. So a lot of high percentage throws, and he also loves play action. In 2013, Nick Foles ran play action 33% of the time, third most in the league. 2014, 32%, most in the league, high quarterback rating there too. And in 2017, Case Keenum ran play action 29% of the time, third most in the league, for a 111.8 quarterback rating on those plays. So he's really a guy that loves to run play action, and he ran the football a lot more with the Vikings this season.
Well, I was going to say, that's Eli Manning's bread and butter. Yep. When he can rely on play action, clearly he's had success, and he also has had success when he's had a consistent running game. So, I mean, Pat Shurmur's utilized those factors when he's been with other teams. The question is, in the event that he does come to this team, would he have those weapons to try to utilize in the same way that he did in stops like Cleveland and Minnesota, as Philly?
And you look at his numbers this year, and like you mentioned before, Lance, they're a lot better. They're 11th in yards per game, 10th in points per game. 122 rushing yards per game is 7th in the league, 8th in the league in rushing attempts per game. Their rushing average is 3.9, but
they're running the ball.
They stick with it.
That's the bigger point.
Exactly, which is why I brought up those other numbers first. And passing, they're around, you know, between 10th and 13th as well. 14 giveaways only, so they do not give the ball away.
And Keenum had a very strong season in protecting the football.
And that goes back to high percentage passes and that West Coast offense. 8th in sack rate, they've done a good job of protecting him, though in recent games he has seen more pressure, and he did struggle against pressure rating-wise in that past game. 3rd in third down conversions, 2nd in time of possession this year, the Minnesota Vikings,
which goes back to
running the football. So those are the type of things we've seen from Pat Shurmur over the course of his career, and this year with the Vikings, like you said, when he's had talent, the results have been a lot better. I don't know how much I can really take out of the Browns and Rams tenures because – frankly, he just didn't have the players.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the fact that Cleveland has been a merry-go-round at the quarterback position. The Rams had injuries. But, you know, this is the other thing to look at, John. He has done, to me, a nice job in developing some younger quarterbacks in the early stages of their careers. I mean, like you said, he worked with Bradford when Bradford came in as a rookie. You know, Case Keenum is not necessarily an old quarterback. And what happens when you give Case Keenum some stability, you can utilize him in the correct way and play off of his strengths, which they did in Minnesota. I mean, Cleveland, once again, you're talking about moving and shifting different quarterbacks in all the time.
Again,
I mean,
they're not.
I don't know if I could take much away from that.
But I think what you like is that they're not asking Case Keenum to go out there and win the game.
No,
on
of course
his own.
Not. Nor should any team do
correct.
That. Yeah. And that, to me, goes back on coaching.
Right.
When the coach sees the limitations and the ceiling of the talent that they're working with and says, hey, we've got to find the scheme that's going to work well for this player. So that, I think, is promising. The one thing that I didn't have a chance to look up, when he was the Cleveland head coach,
yeah,
whether or not he was the one calling the plays,
you know what?
Consistently.
That's a good question.
You know, that would be something good to at least just get an idea of. Would he bring in an offensive coordinator, or would he be the guy that would be running the plays? I mean, every different offensive-minded coach does something differently. Also, you know, who would be a quarterback's coach for him, too, would be something that I think you'd have to take into consideration. So all of those things are something to look at because, remember, he wasn't with Cleveland very long, and when he was with Spags, he was the OC. So, of course, he's going to call plays under those circumstances, and he's going to be able to do the heavy lifting. But I think you have a veteran guy that has been in a variety of different places. He's worked with a variety of different talent. And, you know, I think he's made the most of the talent that he's had in the variety of stops that he has taken place across the NFL. So you got to take that into consideration.
I could tell you in 2011, he did not have an offensive coordinator on staff in Cleveland. So I'm guessing that probably means he called the plays.
I think that's a fair assumption. Yes.
Dick Duron was his defensive coordinator that year. I can
Bears
look
coach.
Up. I would doubt that changed in 2012, but I can look that up for you right now. In 2012, the Browns coaching staff had Brad Childress as the offensive coordinator. Whether or not he called plays that year, I cannot say for sure.
But it's somebody that has experience calling
correct.
Plays. Yeah. And we've seen a trend where there have been a lot of offensive-minded coaches that bring in an offensive coordinator / assistant head coach, a guy that at least helps coordinate the offense. He may not call the plays, but he's at least going to have some type of an influence. I mean, for example, it's funny you brought up Brad Childress. Andy Reid had brought in Brad Childress mm-hmm. over the last two seasons. I think he was the assistant head coach / offensive guru. I know they had Matt Nagy, who now became the Bears head coach, but you had another offensive mind on the staff.
Well, again, he comes from the Andy Reid West Coast
which
tree.
Which is not a surprise.
Familiar with
yeah.
the offense. That's not a surprise. Look, the West Coast guys stay in their family. That's what it's going to be. That's how it works, especially that Andy Reid line. They kind of all have always kind of come together a little bit. And I think the change in Shurmur is interesting with the Vikings. And you wonder is he that 60-40 pass-run guy, or is he the 50-50 pass-run guy like he was this year with Minnesota when he had better talent and could and can do that? And was he a 60-40 split because those teams were down big in a lot of games and they had to try to come back? So their imbalance run-pass, that's another thing to take in consideration. So I think those are all interesting things, but I the way he's run the offense in Minnesota this year, to me, is encouraging in that it's maybe a little bit different than what we've seen the last couple of years and could work outdoors in the Northeast.
Well, it all goes back to the offensive line. That, to me, was the turning point for the Vikings season. Because a lot of people are going to say the following, John. They're going to say, okay, well, if you look at the Giants roster right now and you look at what the Vikings are working with, the Giants have a lot of playmakers at the receiving position. Sure. I mean, I don't think it's drastically different from what the Vikings are putting out there with Diggs, Thielen, and Rudolph, who I mentioned. All right, you got Beckham, you got Evan Ingram, you
Shepherd.
Got Sterling Shepard. Yep. Okay, so clearly you have similarities. Do you have running backs? Well, Orleans Dark was a free agent. They drafted Wayne Goldman. Let's see what the backfield looks like. I think there's some uncertainty there, but it all goes back to the offensive line at the end of the day. Minnesota revamped its offensive line, and why do you think they went from an 8-8 team just on the outside looking in to one of the best teams in the NFC? That, and then obviously one of the best defenses in the NFL. But that defense was in place
sure.
since Mike Zimmer took over. No, I don't want to hear that defense drastically turned around. It was there already.
And here's the thing about the offensive line, too, folks. Remember, they returned two starters. So do we know the Giants are going to have two returning starters at the same position? I don't know about that. They spent huge money on a left tackle.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And we're not sure if that guy's even going to be available in free agency this year, someone of Riley Reiff's character. And then they brought back, I think Mike Remmers is someone that was on their team previously, and they brought back this offseason to play on the offensive line. So they probably – they replaced three of their guys because two of their guys had started the previous season, a few games at least. So they were able to help their offensive line from year to year. Now, do they have one of the top offensive lines
in
the
league? No, not at
all. But no, but they're good enough. So
that's all you need.
That's where you want to try to go. But again, we got some calls late last week, Lance, where people called up and said, oh, it's easy for the Giants to fix their offensive line in a year. It's not easy to fix your offensive line in a year. It takes a lot of hard work and resources to do something like that. Is it possible? Sure, but it's not easy. And I'll leave it at that.
No, I mean, I agree with you. You could address it through the draft. You can obviously target free agents. But that doesn't mean that that's going to pan out. Because if you're Dave Gettleman, John, you don't know how the market's going to play out in terms of free agency, specifically for the offensive line. And I know, you know, I'm not going to try to revisit what happened last offseason, but a lot of people keep pointing to Andrew Whitworth. You know, even if you target Andrew Whitworth, you don't know what type of money Andrew Whitworth is going to be offered. You may have a ballpark range and say, hey, we'll talk to Andrew Whitworth. This is the type of money that we're willing to offer him. And then all of a sudden, two other teams come out of nowhere and wow him with an offer that you're like, all right, listen, we just don't think we want to put those type of resources towards him. So, you know, that's the other thing that you just don't know, how the market's going to play out.
Absolutely.
Can't predict that.
All right, let's get to it, folks. 201-939-4513. You're talking about the weekend games as well. A defense-themed weekend in the NFL in terms of the teams that won, even though that Jaguar-Steeler game was about 90
early on,
points in
it was a
game.
Defensive battle, yeah.
But a lot of fun. All right, let's go to Christian in New York. He's been holding the longest. Hey, Christian, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. I'm not getting too excited about Shurmur yet because I just want to hear it from the team before I really kind of buy into the idea. But really, as far as Eli is concerned, I feel like he needs to go back to something more like Gilbride's system, but kind of mix it with McAdoo's a little bit where, sure, he's throwing a little more short passes, but you're really working on the big gains because as much as I love Eli, I don't like him making a ton of decisions every game if he doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it's funny, Christian, and I looked at that too. Pass plays over 20 yards with the Rams. Shurmur was near the bottom of the league. First year with the Browns near the bottom of the league. But his second year with Cleveland, he was right 15th in the league in terms of pass plays over 20 yards. And this year with the Vikings, he's 13th in pass plays over 20 yards. So
times. He
is willing to go down the field if he has the talent and people to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's exciting because, I mean, our receivers are, you know, at least comparable to the talent of Thielen and Diggs, and you
it's
know maybe
better.
Better.
Yeah, sure, I agree.
But as far as getting more linemen is concerned, I feel like the team can't look at it anymore as guys getting overpaid on the line because I feel like that's just the new market price.
Sure.
And
yeah,
it's like I feel like getting Riley Reiff would have been a good decision, getting Andrew Whitworth, and I guess, you know, entering this new kind of time where there's absolutely no linemen out there, because, I mean, they're not hitting free agency unless there's something that the team doesn't like about them.
No, Christian, you're absolutely right, but the question was never, are these guys, quote-unquote, worth the money you're paying for them? Can you actually pay those guys and have enough money left to pay the guys that are coming up in free agency on your own roster?
Yeah, and I guess that just comes down to, you know, how much you're prioritizing the line, because I don't know, as much as I like Landon Collins, you know, I feel like he could be a guy you could replace.
Easier said than done.
Well, yeah, and he's such a, you know, important guy. I wouldn't like to see him be the first guy, you know. But guys like Justin Pugh much before him, you know, I'd like to see them go get a guy that can actually run block and move some people. And it seems like if he doesn't get blown back, that's a win for him.
Well, that's why, I mean, you have to look at, you said prioritizing the offensive line, but sometimes there are teams that say we can invest in a young guy and we could get the necessary production that we need from the offensive line, and then we could use our financial resources to lock up some of the talent that we've already worked on developing. So, I mean, it all goes back to Dave Gettleman's philosophy. And, you know, John and I have had previous shows where we've looked at what he did with Carolina. And if you go back to Carolina, he invested draft picks to address the offensive line.
And not always day one picks either.
Correct. There were some late guys who have panned out. We talked about they've become Pro Bowlers, all pros. And, you know, if you look at what Gettleman did in free agency to address the offensive line, you know, it's not as if he went out and went on a spending spree every single offseason.
One guy he spent big on was Ryan Khalil.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying outside of that, now, I'm not saying that that's not going to happen with the Giants. That's not my point. But you can look at how GMs say, I'd rather grow and develop a young guy and that I can have on a rookie contract, as opposed to spending all of my resources on five guys, and then one guy gets hurt, and then I don't have enough depth, and then I have issues elsewhere. So, I mean, it really is. It's like balancing a budget. That's what you have to do when you go about prioritizing what position you think you want to invest the most money in.
And they honestly need four new offensive linemen. I mean, I know Eric
Yeah, but
Flowers
that, but
proved.
Here's the thing. I don't mean to cut you off, Christian. You have to understand that may be what you think, but the reality is it's highly unlikely that you could just snap your fingers and say they're going to bring in four new starters on the offensive line.
Now, Christian,
and it's going to be that easy.
It wouldn't surprise me, Christian, if they had three new starters. That wouldn't surprise me.
No, but I mean, if we're starting to talk about four to five brand new offensive linemen, that may be asking a lot.
Well, yeah, not all in one year. I mean,
of course.
But you know, there's a lot of linemen coming up in this draft. You could get a starter in the second round, especially where they're placed, unless they just fly off the board like crazy. But
not a left tackle,
there's
though.
Also, well, I don't know. I mean, hopefully that Connor Williams guy can be pretty good. But
yeah, well, Connor Williams is going to be off the board in the first 15 picks.
Yeah, probably. but I would like to think one of these guys could be better than Eric Flowers, because
sure,
that's possible. Comfortable in 3 years.
No, look, I mean, Christian, that's possible. No one's saying it's not. But again, I caution people this every year. They think you're going to draft an offensive lineman, a tackle, and put him in there. Nearly every offensive tackle that's been drafted as a rookie has struggled in his first year. So it's not going to be something that's going to happen right away.
And honestly, I've always loved Justin Pugh to be more of a left tackle, because he's not like super physical, but he's got good technique. He's quick. I mean, I know I've called in before about it, but I don't know. I just feel like he even filled in well at tackle when
he's
had to play there this year.
Thank you, Christian. Appreciate the call, buddy.
You know, that's where he was in college. And once again, you know, Dave Gettleman's outlook of the offensive line could be completely different from how Jerry Reese viewed linemen. I mean, Dave Gettleman may tell the new coach, I want to re-sign Justin Pugh, and I want to think about moving him to left tackle. I mean, for all we know, that may be a part of the conversation. I don't think what Christian just said is a stretch, but once again, until we see how things play out in OTAs and minicamp, it's hard to speculate to that point. And remember, Pugh, I'm sure, is going to get a great deal of interest out on the market, because he's a versatile offensive lineman. And regardless of what you think about Justin Pugh and him being injury-plagued and how he fit into the Giants scheme, you are going to be hard-pressed as a front office executive to find an offensive lineman with experience, John, that you can have faith he can play a variety of different positions in this game.
Four spots.
Yeah. I mean, that's a valuable commodity. You can't dismiss that.
No, absolutely not. And you're right. It'll be interesting to see what Dave Gettleman and the new regime does think of Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg, for that matter. Both guys that are free agents, and where they think Eric Flowers' best position is, too. I mean, we don't know. Do they think he's a left tackle? Do they think he can play right tackle? Maybe they think he's a guard. Who knows?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. Plus, I would add Fluker into that conversation, too. I mean, they're going to have to determine, did he show them enough in one season that he also warrants being brought back?
Right. And he, I believe he did say after the season that he would like to get a longer-term deal.
Which is understandable.
Of course.
More
you
security.
Wanna, yeah. You don't want to do one-year deals, obviously. Let's go to Marco in Connecticut. He's up next. Hi, Marco. Long time no speak, man. How are you?
What's up, John and Lance? How are you guys?
We're great, Marco. Right, Happy Marco. New Year.
I'm doing great. I want to talk about Davis Webb. I caught up on all the shows last week, and Paul was on a few times with some. And I respect Paul a lot, and especially some of his hard stances that he's taking on Webb, and specifically what fans think the Giants should do with the second pick.
He is the captain of the fan club, Marco.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. I just think, like, maybe a little bit of an open mind to this. Because, I can just speak for myself. I'm not bashing Davis Webb. I'm not throwing him out because last season he was a rookie and we've turned over quite a bit. Without a doubt, I think he should be evaluated. I think he should be thought of in the plans going forward. But I think when you have a number two draft pick, you really have to consider what you're talking about here. And I don't think the Giants want to draft in this position again. But I didn't call just to make my point. I want to ask you guys some questions.
Sure.
Why, kind of high overview, why was Davis Webb a third-round pick? Has that ever been discussed? Like,
I could tell you why, Marco. I went back and I looked at three or four games. And if you have time, go back and listen to last week's show on Wednesday, because Paul and I have a really good back and forth on this. And I actually got Paul to admit that, look, I don't know that Davis Webb is going to be the next guy, but I have really good confidence that he will be as compared to who the Giants might pick it to. And my point, I think, is one that is kind of the point behind your question, is that I have more faith in the guy that's going to get picked second overall. I think he has a higher probability of being your next guy than the guy that got picked in the third round. And the reason he got picked in the third round, getting back to your question, Marco, is when he was at Cal, I watched three full games, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch more of them. I didn't have time last week. I literally saw him make two or three caliber NFL reads and throws over three games. I see Josh Rosen make 8 to 12 of those in one game in UCLA last year. When you say, like, people say, oh, Deshaun Watson played in the spread. Yeah, technically it was the spread, but he did NFL things and NFL throws within that system. He was, last year at Cal, Davis Webb was pure Texas Tech, one read. I can't tell you how many passes he threw at or behind the line of scrimmage per game. It must have been 12. So that's why he went to the third round. It's all projection. They love his mind, his body, his arm, his smarts, and that's all the things we love from him here, what we've seen from him so far in the building. But we haven't seen him in games do a lot of NFL things while under pressure by defenses, which really is the whole kit and caboodle, in my opinion, and that's the toughest thing to project.
Well, and the other thing I'll add to that, and I think John gave a nice layout in terms of what Davis Webb dealt with in college. We had Jim Zorn on our program last year. Jim Zorn, the former Redskins head coach, who's now, you know, a guy that works with quarterbacks and developing them, worked with Davis Webb right before the draft, teaching him, John, how to play under center for the first time in his career.
Oh, yeah.
He had never played under center, and also teaching
like going
him,
back to Pop Warner.
Yeah,
we're talking
I mean,
about.
So you know that's another reason why you're not going to take that quarterback in the first round, because you now have to all of a sudden go back to the basics and also commanding a huddle, knowing the language of the law, jargon,
not looking to the sideline for audibles.
Of course, I mean all of those things he had to learn from the start. So I mean, when you take that into consideration, Marco, I think it's understandable why teams did not want to take a chance on him in the first two.
And so, okay, to your point then, and I'm keeping an open mind, Webb, when he was at Texas Tech, and correct me if I'm wrong, was also there with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah,
and Baker Mayfield. Now,
yes,
Mahomes,
that's correct.
Mahomes last year, first round pick. Baker Mayfield will most likely be a first round pick. They're all coming out of the same offense. Mahomes stays. Baker and Davis Webb leave. I mean, so we're talking about the other two guys he was there with in the same offense as first round picks, but.
It's a fair point.
Fine.
Here's the other thing I'll add, Mark. It's a fair point, but remember, Baker Mayfield, then he goes to Oklahoma, one of the most dynamic offenses in college football.
As a walk-on, right? Didn't he go there as a walk-on?
He did. He walked up to Bob Stoops and said, "Hey, how you doing?" when they had like some dinner, and then all of a sudden he walks on, he tries out, and they want him to be the starter. But this goes back to the stock of a college quarterback. Now, I'm not saying that Davis Webb is going to have the potential to be what Baker Mayfield or whatever becomes, but the point is, you don't think Baker Mayfield's stock was helped and aided by the offense that he ran and how many points they put up, Heisman Trophy watch, and this and that? You have to take that into consideration. Davis Webb, he's at Cal. You know, Cal's not necessarily a program that is all of a sudden turning pages and getting people's attention in the college football rankings. I think college football, a lot of it is what team you're on, the hype surrounding the team. You know, that plays a big role leading up to the draft.
Yeah, Marco, I want to be really clear about something, too. We're not trying to diss Davis Webb.
No, I'm not trying to sell him either, too.
No, we're not. We're just trying to give you the information, what he's done and where he's been. I could tell you. You know who one of the only players I've seen in this building over the past week is? Davis Webb. He's here watching film of himself in practice last year to try to get better. I asked him after our off-season interview, what are you doing this off-season? Do you have any plans? He goes, I'm probably going to have to learn a new offense. I'm not going anywhere. I go, what, you're not going to take one vacation? He goes, no, I'm going to work. And that was like off-air, not faking it. He was dead serious. So the kid cares.
And how can't you root for a guy like that? Like, I want him to be the guy.
Me too.
I would love if the Giants were in a position at number two to really do some damage at that pick and not have to just go all in on a quarterback. I would love that.
But, me too.
I believe you, John. But here's a question.
Well, that makes one of us. But anyway, continue.
And you too, Lance. But here's a question for that Paul has also brought up. Late in the season, when fans were saying, "Why aren't we seeing Webb?" when the season was just totally in the tank, why aren't we seeing Webb? And that was the big discussion point. Someone on your on the show said, well, I mean, are you going to play him this week against the Eagles? Or the Giants had they were lined up to go against a few top defenses.
Yeah, that was
one
me.
Of them was Philly.
Yeah, I said that. Mm-hmm.
But John, let me. You know, when I heard that, this is the first thing I thought of. Eli's rookie year, he went against a murderer's row
yeah,
of
he did.
Defenses.
You're right.
And did anyone stop and say, oh my God, this kid's not ready. We can't play him yet.
Yeah,
like,
but
I didn't know.
Davis Webb's not Eli Manning in his first year either. Eli was far more ready to play in his first year than Davis Webb was.
And here's the other thing. You know, Eli also was inserted into the starting lineup much earlier in the season. You know, the franchise was clearly going in a different direction.
And he had a better offensive line in front of him.
He also did not have a coaching change that occurred. You know, I mean, if you look back, and listen, if you want to think that there's a weak excuse, call it a weak excuse. But I'm sure when Spags takes over as the head coach, interim head coach, you know, one of his biggest priorities, and I don't think it was BS, he wanted to go out and win football games.
Yeah, he did.
You know, and let's face it, while you'd love to see Davis Webb and develop, if you're Spags, you also want to try to win football games. Eli Manning by far gives you the best chance to win those
and
football
games. And Marco, bigger picture to me, and then I'll let you finish. Here's the bottom line. And this is what I said on last Wednesday's show, and I actually got Paul to agree with me. I've been working on him for like a month. I finally got him to agree with me. When you're talking about quarterbacks in the draft, tech, any position in the draft, you know what you're talking about? You're talking about probabilities. What moves gives the team the best chance of having your next franchise quarterback? Do you have the best chance by holding on to the web? Do you have the best chance of drafting a quarterback, or do you have a best chance of doing both? And then you can see if either one of the two guys make it. If you really think getting that next franchise quarterback is your top 100% priority and you want to maximize your odds because there are no guarantees in life with anybody, no matter where you draft them and who they are, how do you best go about that? And that's the question that Dave Gettleman will have to figure out over the course of the next few months. It's all about probabilities.
And I agree with that, but now I'm in the Webb camp when I make this point. For Davis Webb, at the end of the year, when we knew that the team was going to have a new general manager and a new head coach, we had no idea what was going to go on with the rest of the offensive staff. So now we've lost quarterbacks coach Cignetti, McAdoo, Mark Ross, Jerry Reese. Those are four key figures in Davis Webb's development, in what I believe, right? Those four guys were huge stakeholders in Davis Webb, all gone. And now you bring in a new general manager and a new head coach, and I'm sure they've have their draft reports.
Of course, they looked
at Davis Webb last year.
Yeah, sure they do.
But wouldn't have been a little helpful, to see this guy in a little bit of play and a little bit of action.
Sure, that's fair.
That's the point.
Yeah,
now.
No, that's fair.
So now we go in, and we're just – I know he's a great locker room guy. He's working hard. But that was, like, one thing that I –
But Marco, I couldn't
move past.
Well,
that.
And thank you, Marco. Appreciate the call, buddy.
Appreciate the call. And I get that. And I don't think anybody is going to say that there wouldn't have been value in having Davis Webb get some regular season reps.
And I would have had no problem with him coming in to a couple of these games after they're out of hand in the second half.
I agree. But even if you get those few reps for Davis Webb, John, back to Marco's point, that doesn't mean you're going to change the mindset of Dave Gettleman and anybody else who comes in and says, "Oh my God, what I saw in the fourth quarter of two games, I'm going to throw my draft report away."
Dave Gettleman said it. He said, "How much would have we been able to figure out about this kid anyway?" Or was that Ernie Accorsi that said it? I think it was Ernie Accorsi that said it.
Yeah.
He said, "How much were we going to be able to figure out about this kid watching him with this group of players around him anyway?"
Guys coming off the street, exactly. Yeah.
You can't. It's just really, really hard. And I think here's the interesting thing, Lance, and I think this is the calculation. Again, these are random numbers. I'm not saying these are the actual numbers. Let's say Dave Gettleman believes Davis Webb is a 50% chance of being the next franchise quarterback. And he's sitting there, but he thinks that Josh Rosen has an 80% chance of being the next franchise quarterback. Is that 30% difference worth using the second overall pick in the draft? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Those are the types of decisions that aren't easy decisions that the Giants people in the front office are going to have to make.
But I would say, to your point, the combination of the two, though, makes you feel as if, all right, we've got some options, we have some exploration.
Sure.
I go back to the Washington Redskins. They drafted RG3, and then what happened, John? Kirk Cousins was there. They took him. RG3 gets hurt. Kirk Cousins becomes the security blanket. That increased their chances to have some stability at the position. There's nothing wrong with that.
I brought up the same thing. You're absolutely right. 201-939-4513. Travis in Queens. He's up next. Hi, Travis.
Hey, Charles. How you guys doing?
What's up, bud?
Travis. What do you got for us?
Good. Well, to piggyback on what you're saying with the Washington situation, it's a little bit different for the fact that there was two quarterbacks that they drafted. It wasn't Eli Manning starting, like an older quarterback started, and they drafted two quarterbacks.
Well, they had Rex Grossman, if memory serves me correct.
Yeah, but,
I mean, so they were utilizing veterans.
It's a fair point, but I think when you're looking ahead 3 years from now, or four, however many years it's going to be that Eli's the starting quarterback, and who knows, maybe it won't be one. Who knows? We'll see what happens this offseason. You're still hedging your bets, for lack of a better term, in terms of finding your next guy.
And probably, like you said, here's why I think that going quarterback wouldn't really make sense, probability-wise, is because, let me ask you this, if you go quarterback, right, second pick, and Eli had 2 years left, what we've seen from this year, we can argue that Eli got 2 years max. Right, I think this is.
Well, he's under contract, so, I mean, you could certainly make that argument based on how the layout of the financials is. But go ahead.
Oh, all right. But no, I'm just need far as, like, play-wise. But, okay, but far as contract as well, too, right? It would be a wasted pick to have Eli Manning that's still the same Eli Manning that we got last year with a better offensive line versus having a quarterback. Two quarterbacks sitting, your second pick sitting 2 years waiting. I think all that time could go into Davis Webb, no?
Well, but Travis, if you do have those two guys, are we sure Eli Manning would be here for two more years? What if one of those guys shows the coaches in the front office so much after 1 year that they're ready to pass the reins off in 2019? I don't know the answer to that, but that's possible.
But again, the probability is greater with Eli Manning versus going with a quarterback at two and having Webb, no?
Yeah, but Travis, why are you prioritizing the next two seasons over the 13 seasons after that?
Yeah, I mean, you got to think big picture, too.
Right. And so now going big picture was my next point. How I would like to ask you guys, right? You don't have a quarterback, you don't have a running back, you don't have a left tackle. Which one would you guys draft first?
Quarterback.
Quarterback?
Most important position on the field.
See, once again, John, we had this talk last week with Jeff. You guys value quarterback as if running backs and left tackles are around the corner.
Travis, let me tell you something. Every single talent evaluator in the NFL values the quarterback more than every other position on the field, and I promise you that. I will put my life on the line on that analysis.
Well, and Travis, of those three positions, running back is third on the list. It's not even close to those other two.
Correct.
I mean, think about how many teams have drafted guys in the fifth round, and I could tell you teams this year that took guys off the street with good offensive lines and had productive running
backs.
Travis,
the Patriots have been the best team in football for 15 years. They've never prioritized the running back position once.
That's another segment. I don't even want to dive into them. I can't stand it.
Fair enough.
So you guys say that, but quarterback is the biggest bust position than
running back. Offensive lineman has been bust too, if you go to high first-round pick.
No, but Travis, in fairness, I think the quarterback position from college to the pros might be the toughest one to evaluate. I don't think Lance and I would argue with that.
All right, so off that. Now, my question about Pat Sherman, right?
Yes.
When we watch Jacksonville, that's like what we used to do. I miss that, man. I mean, I don't know too much about Pat Sherman as far as the information you guys gave. And the West Coast, I want to know, what's the difference? Are we getting a different type of West Coast offense, or is it all the same thing?
It isn't all exactly the same. And Travis, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, good stuff, good questions, good information. It all comes from the same philosophical tree, but obviously once you get onto a tree, all the branches look a little bit different, right?
Of course.
So that's why when you watch Mike McCarthy's offense in Green Bay, it doesn't look exactly like Andy Reid's offense in Kansas City. It didn't look exactly like George Seifert's offense when he was in San Francisco. And it doesn't just look like Hugh Jackson's offense in Cleveland or Jay Gruden's offense in Washington. You know, they're all different branches. So, no, it's not all exactly the same. And different guys operate different ways. They run pass percentage different, the type of running plays, the type of pass routes. It really depends on the coach. But it comes from the same philosophical tree, and this is kind of how there's a great book out there. It's called Smart Football, and Chris Jones, I think, is the author. And he explains basically the two different ways you get guys open offensively is by stretching the field vertical or by stretching the field horizontally, okay? And that's how you spread out the defenders enough to create open areas for wide receivers, right? So the Ernie Zampezi, Kevin, run and shoot, Air Coryell, they like to stretch the field vertically. They like to get the safeties back, spread the linebackers, find the holes between the safeties and the linebackers, things like that, right? The West Coast is designed where you want to spread the field more horizontally. And you put guys on some different levels, but you want to get them spread out. You run all those shallow crossing routes so the defense can't spread enough to stop all those little passing lanes. So that's kind of the philosophical difference between the down the field and more of the West Coast type of system.
Well, and it goes back to coaching and making adjustments based on who you go up against and the personnel you have. Case in point, John.
That was the thing, and who the personnel you have is the big one.
So you can't, and we went over Pat Shermer's personnel and how things change based on what happened in Cleveland, Philly, and Minnesota. So, you can't just say, oh, well, this guy's from the West Coast system. This guy's from the West Coast system. Ben McAdoo ran the West Coast system. Here we go. It's the same thing all over again.
Right.
Every coach has a different mindset. But I'll go to relevant stuff. Look at the postseason, John. And you brought up a good point in terms of how you spread out personnel. When Philly was going up against Atlanta, to me, based on Dan Quinn's philosophy, has a very fast defense. He has young guys that love to run sideline to sideline. Jacksonville is similar. What New England is going to do this weekend is, I guarantee you, Belichick and McDaniels are going to spread those guys out like crazy. And they're going to make the Jaguars, they're going to make them cover sideline to sideline.
And I think they're also going to try to use power and run right at those guys.
Correct.
I mean, how many times did the Steelers try to run those outside runs and those Jaguar linebackers running like missiles, taking the guys out behind the line of scrimmage?
So I think that you're going to have a combination of pounding the football, but also running those crossing routes, getting matchups so that these guys have to run sideline to sideline. Because Philadelphia, if you go back to the Nick Foles game, he took some chances down the field, but a lot of it was dump it off to the running back, run screens.
Run pass options.
Correct. A lot of that. And I think New England is going to have a very similar scheme. So my point is, it's all about the coach coming in and seeing what defenses he's going up against and also noticing what type of personnel he has. You know, how Pat Shurmur utilizes Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen is not necessarily guaranteed to be the same way that he would utilize Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram. I think good coaches, they adapt to their personnel.
Wow,
that's what I always say.
We have an old school group of callers coming up here.
I see, indeed.
We'll start with Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland. What's going on, Shakes?
John and Lance, what's going on, fellas?
How are you, pal?
Good night, Shakes.
I'm all right. I got a few things.
Sure.
First, I just want to say, this is the first thing I really want to get out. This has been a real tough season.
Yeah, it has.
Real tough.
Sure.
And hard on the eyes. As far as y'all know me, calling for three, four years now, and y'all know how big of a Giant fan I am, but big of a football fan that I am.
Yes, sir.
And this year, it's been hard for me to even watch games.
Well, Shakes, here's the thing, and I said this to Bob Papa, and Paul Dottino won't listen to me. He was here the day after that final game against the Redskins breaking down X's and O's. But really, in a lot of ways, with all the injuries and stuff,
yes,
there was so little that you could even glean from the last three or four games of the year just because of the personnel you were throwing out there. How much were you really learning about the team? It was very difficult.
It absolutely, but not even just for the Giants. Around the league, the injuries that occurred this season has made it where you really, it was hard to watch. I mean, you look at the names that went down that we got to miss this season. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's why Shakes
OBJs.
But the good teams,
Aaron Rodgers,
teams that last and go far in the postseason are the ones that can overcome that and have good depth charts. Wow. I mean, we were talking about the Vikings earlier.
And also didn't suffer some of those injuries, too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look, the Vikings, we're talking about the Vikings, right?
Right.
And this is why I think Pat Shurmur and Mike Zimmer deserve a lot of credit. Sam Bradford had a great performance in the opener against the Saints. He bangs up his knee. He's not the same. So Case Keenum's got to step in. And Dalvin Cook, who had two solid games to start, early pick for them, he goes down. Wow. And, they're 13-3. So, I mean, it can be done. It's rare, but it can be done.
Yeah, well, so my point was this, right? It was hard for me to watch these games this year. And then I watched the Minnesota game, the Minnesota and New Orleans this past weekend. Unbelievable game.
How about that finish? Great ending.
Yeah, even the college football championship
Alabama. Georgia, yep.
Great game.
Those games are the reason why I'm a Giant fan and the reason why I am a football fan. Those games were so exciting, and it reminded me of why I tune in. So I'm just saying for that, my point was for the Giants to get back to that. We need that. We need a reminder of why we sit here and tune in each and every Sunday. Now, my second point was, my second thing I wanted to come out with is I wanted to help Travis, the last caller. I wanted to help him on that running back situation. Now, he was going about it the wrong way. Now, yes, quarterback is the most – you got to have it. That is the first thing that you look in a successful – organization, do they have a franchise quarterback?
Yes, sir.
So, I understand where he's going at because, you people poop on the running backs and the tackles and everything. And like y'all said, the running back is after that. It's after the quarterbacks and the tackles, because that goes hand in hand. You got to have somebody to block for that franchise quarterback.
Sure.
Now, but here's the thing about it. When you go into this draft, this is my point. First of all, it's not that we don't have a franchise quarterback. We have one that we are looking at in two seasons to do something and to win. Hopefully to win and go out on that white horse that we all want him to go out on.
Sure.
So in that aspect, grabbing up not just the position, bar the position out of it. Oh, I don't want to take a running back that high. I don't care. Special player. Just like I come on every single season, I'm saying Amari Cooper, y'all. I'm saying I don't want to do them all. Mike Evans.
You want to splash. You want to splash, baby. You want to splash.
Exactly. Thank you.
Now Saquon Barkley is going to come out of his mouth next.
Saquon Barkley.
What'd I tell you?
Cannonball of the
soothsayer. Yeah.
You know, that I'm running that campaign.
I know you are. I know you are.
I'm running that campaign.
And that's part – and Shakes, that's part of the conversation at number two. You have to consider him. Nobody's saying that you shouldn't consider him.
Correct.
John and I were just getting into the quarterback topic and debate. And, you know, John will be the first one to admit, I'm not one that says, number two, you got to take a quarterback. No. I am a subscriber to the philosophy. You could find your quarterback in a variety of ways. But I do agree with John that the percentage increases when you take the quarterback high in the first round.
Shakes,
I'm not going to deny that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that doesn't mean you have to take the quarterback in number
and
two.
Shakes, here's the thing.
Shakes, here's the thing.
Lance is right. I'm not going to disagree with him. And if the Giants take a look at these quarterbacks – and Dave Gettleman decides that I'm not sold on any of these guys. You know, I think maybe they got a shot, but I don't know. You know, I don't like this about him, this about that guy. And they're sitting there, too, and they don't get a really good deal to, you know, to get a King's Ransom to trade down. I would be very much in the camp of highly considering Saquon Barkley. I have no problem with that.
Thank y'all.
How about that?
I appreciate that. That is my whole point of that, is because some
what
of
else
these
can we
fans
do for you
come
today?
On and they saying, oh, we just got to get a quarterback because who knows when we're going to be in this situation again. You don't take a quarterback just for the sake of taking a quarterback.
Absolutely.
No.
That's the worst thing you could do.
Yeah, because then you set yourself back 5 years.
Yeah, you take the quarterback because you have confidence in the quarterback. That's
what you
do.
If you pick the wrong guy, it could be doomed for the next 10 years. If you pick the right guy, you're good. But who? If you're not positive, if that's your guy, then don't do it.
Hey, but Shakes, one thing. I'm gonna throw one more hypothetical out to you before we say goodbye, though. How about this? What happens if I go up to Dave Gettleman's office at night, I smuggle in there, and I get his scouting report on Josh Rosen, and I bring it down, I show it to you, and Shakes, Dave Gettleman believes in his heart and hearts that Josh Rosen is the next great franchise quarterback for the New York Football Giants, and he, with every fiber of his being, believes it. And I hand you that scouting report. Do you pick Barkley or do you pick Rosen?
No, you pick Rosen. You pick Rosen.
See, this is logic. Shakes, thank you. We're all on the same page. I like it.
You got to. If you feel like that is your guy and you bang the table and say this is the franchise quarterback and you believe it, please take that guy. Please. But if you do not feel that way, take the short shot and a special player.
I think
please.
We're in agreement there.
Thank you, Shakes.
Okay. Yeah. Hold on 1 second.
Real fast.
Last thing, because I wanted to react on the coach.
Yes.
I love it. And the reason why I love it is because I feel like he runs the ball and
he has this year.
It's primary to him that he wants to run the ball, and that's a notch for my campaign. Barkley or bust. Thank y'all for taking
thank you,
my
Shakes.
Call.
Good stuff.
All right, Shakes. Appreciate
it. Hey, and I love the fact that Shermer has had one of the most balanced offenses in the league this year, and it's hard to be upset about that. All right, I got 5 minutes here. Joe in Pennsylvania, I'm not going to get to you. I'm sorry. Give us a call back tomorrow. I'll make sure I'll get you on first. I promise you that. But Steve and Len have been holding out to get to him. Steve in D.C. Go ahead, Steve.
First of all, Happy New Year to you, fellas. I appreciate you taking my call.
Happy New Year, Steve. Doing? We're doing great.
Hey, first of all, Shakes is going to be so mad that I came after him because we've been going at it. You know, first of all, I'm glad to hear you was able to bring some logic to him, John. He has been going crazy with this Barkley thing. I mean, it's been out of control. So I'm glad to hear that he's okay with getting a quarterback if we actually do believe in that quarterback. because even last year, one of the things I was saying is, you know, we know our franchise quarterback is not going to be in the second or third round. I mean, that's just probably just not how it's going to work. So I'm glad to hear he's okay with that. But I'm going to just tell you a couple of quick things, and I'll leave you guys to comment on my, or have a kind of question. But,
sure.
You know, I just want to say this. You know, I mean, everybody knows I'm a Jerry Reese guy. So, and I realize, you know, but I'm a Giants guy first and foremost. You know, since 76, you know, I'm all about Big Blue. So I realize that, you know, sometimes personnel changes, players change. So I'm okay with it because, personally, I really just wasn't happy that it was under his watch that McAdoo came through the door. No, you know, I just did never believe in it. But I do know at the GM, you know, I know everybody's saying, oh, he's so different than Jerry Reese. Even I heard him say it, which is kind of annoying. But what do you expect somebody to say who's replacing, you know, about the person, you know, who he's replaced, who got fired?
Of course.
But the one thing I want to, you know, caution people is this. Number one, aspirations don't always, you know, line up with opportunity.
Of course.
So just because a person might say they got this, that, and the other, you know, the opportunity is not always there. And I'm telling you this, it's a very sad day for me. I mean, I've been a fan for over 40 years to watch us lose possible coaching prospects to the Colts and the freaking Lions. So, to me, the man is not – I'm looking right at gentlemen like, man, you're supposed to get this done. You fired McAdoo early in the game and you still couldn't get it? I wanted a defensive coach. I kind of knew all along they were going to go after Schumer. And that's where my thing is this. I feel like, first of all, he is the same exact dude as the guy we just showed out the door. The same thing. And all it takes, don't get excited about
He has head coaching experience, though, Steve. Mm-hmm. Steve, Pat Shurmur's got head coaching experience.
And
McAdoo did not.
And he was a coordinator for a much longer time than McAdoo
you're
was.
You're talking about a guy with a lot more experience.
I agree, but it's the same offense. The same thing, Dinkin and Duncan. And John, if you look at these yards this year, you will see they were mostly yak yards anyway.
No, that's fair.
So, the whole groom, Mike McCarthy bloodline, you know, that whole powder puff stuff. The Shakes, come on, that's powder puff, Shakes. Don't get fooled. This man is not going to run the ball. You hear the numbers, 60% basically. That's not who we are. This is not NFC East football. And I'm telling you, I'm just not happy, and I really feel like we're making PR decisions. That's why we're not getting the right coaching candidates. And it all started when we reacted because we didn't, you know, the fans got really down on the coaching and the GM and even the ownership when they were all on board with benching Eli. And that's unexcusable not to know what we have in Davis Webb right now. It's unexcusable.
All right,
that's
Steve.
An epic failure on our organization.
Steve, we got to run. We got
to go.
I appreciate the call, man. Sorry, Steve. I'm up against it. Dave's got a meeting here. He has to get to lunch. So I want to make sure we get Lennon, Columbia, Maryland. By the way, this for you, Steve. I have this for you. Passing attempts in the air, 21 yards or more. Vikings are 19th in the league this year in terms of balls in the air going down the field. So hopefully that'll address one of your concerns. Lennon, Columbia, Maryland, you got 60 seconds, Len. I'm sorry. You can call us back tomorrow and get in the other stuff you want to get in. Go ahead.
Well, if that's the case, I'm going to start off with something maybe just a little different.
Sure.
Two great callers, John. I mean, the passion, the emotion coming out of those guys, I just love it. That's why I listen to the show.
That's why we do it.
For those Giants fans that show me that passion.
And that's why we do it.
Show me that emotion. It's good those guys. I'm glad I caught them that day, and I'm almost sorry that I have to follow those two guys. Listen, picks one and two. One of those picks has got to be an offensive lineman. Just absolutely got to be an offensive lineman. Lance, let me try to add something to what you were talking about last Monday after the four games, and again just this morning after the four games. The speed on the field, Lance, is unbelievable. I mean, speed kills, and man, we're seeing it in every one of those teams, every position. These guys can just really run to the ball and hit, and you know, get away from those tacklers. This speed is just incredible. With regard to the coach, I hope we get a good one, guys.
Us too.
I'm going to be old school, John.
No, I don't think anybody wants to go
in there with the old schoolers. So I'm going to be old school real quick here. This guy's got to get control of that locker room. If there's one word for me that summed up the Giants all year long, all the way back to the playoff game and actually preceding the playoff game, all of 2017 is undisciplined.
I think that's
one word that summed it up. You throw in dysfunctional with regard to the locker room. Every one of those units, dysfunction, dominating. I don't care who the coach is. They got to get in there, and they got to get control, and they got to get it from the first day. Gettleman's going to get us the players. I want a coach that's going to take control. Listen, Hubie Brown, keep everybody 1 foot from the out the door. And if that's the way it is, with the Giants for a couple of years,
thank you,
you just absolutely got to take control. One thing real quick, John, let me just say, Stephon Diggs could have been our guy in the fifth round of the 2015 draft.
He could have been.
Let him go by.
He got Odell Beckham, though. I mean,
Mikael Thompson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man.
Taking the call, guys.
Let is like the lion in the forest that has the thorn in his paw, and his thorn is named Mikael Thompson.
Yeah, I mean,
it's hilarious.
Got to squeeze him in every single
Absolutely.
Phone call.
All right, good stuff, guys. Sorry we didn't get to the games this weekend. Maybe Paul and I will do that a little bit more tomorrow. But we wanted to get to the Shermer stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us. Great job on the phones. And, Len, if you want to call back tomorrow, Joe and PA, too, we'll get you right on. I promise you that. I know we didn't get your full points today. But great job. Good information, good spirit, good facts, and good enthusiasm, Lance.
Absolutely.
And we'll see you tomorrow
that's
on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody. Take
Have
it easy.
One.